Good morning. Welcome to our meeting. It's 8 a.m. on August 5th, 2025, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Tony Olson, our Vice President, Julieta Alfarano Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Michelle Nolenbrock, our Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Maureen Stolzner, Deputy Clerk. Please mute or turn off your cell phone if you run the electronic device. Well, item one today is Office of the Washington State Auditor and Sean Hunstock to facilitate this conversation. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Sean Hunstock, Senior Manager, Controller, and Auditor, and it's my pleasure to introduce Tom Bernard from the Washington State Auditor's Office. Tom is here to give the results of their Clean Energy Transformation Act, or CETA compliance examination, as well as the Energy Independence Act examination. And with that, I will turn it over to Tom.
Thank you, Sean. Good morning, Commissioners. And thank you for the opportunity to present the work we've just completed for the district. I'm Tom Bernard, Program Manager for the Washington State Auditor's Office. The program manages the energy audits our office is required by state law to perform of all electric utilities. And we're here today to share the results of three compliance examinations we just completed for the district. I provided a packet of information here, and it's tabbed for you. And we'll go in order of the tab, but on the left side is the agenda, and I'll just quickly go through that. That summarizes the results, and I'll touch on the exhibits as I go through that document. But just to start off with our office's goal is to work with our clients, district is being one of them, in performing our audits. We're an independent body led by Pat McCarthy, our state auditor on Bloomfield. And our goal is to work with each of the entities that we audit to provide transparency to the public. And through that transparency in the audits that we perform, build trust in government and by verifying the things the district is asserting it's doing to comply with the law by independently verifying those things are actually happening, the public. We see our role as vital in supporting public trust. The examination reports we'll be publishing are provided copies of them, and they include the Clean Energy Transformation Act, the report on the Energy Independence Act, the renewable energy requirements for 2024, and then the energy conservation compliance for the period January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2023. So starting with the Clean Energy Transformation Act results, we looked at two areas under this for the period January 1st, 2022 through December 31st, 2024. The two areas that we looked at was the greenhouse gas content calculation that was required. That law was repealed in 2024. Commerce asked all utilities to report the calculation for 2022. And so that is the period that we looked at, and that will be the final year that the district will have to perform that calculation under CETA. And we found that the district did calculate it and complied with the law in doing so and reporting it to Commerce. And the second area we looked at was the low-income energy assistance requirements of CETA. We looked at two areas. One was the district's compliance in providing low-income customers energy assistance programs funding during the period. And we saw the district was in compliance with that. And then we looked at the biennial assessment reporting that's required, and Commerce asked the utilities to report in calendar year 22 and calendar year 2023. And the district complied there as well. We found no reportable issues in how the district complied there. We had an issue in the prior period that we followed up on and saw the district fully corrected that issue. had to do with some reporting that was required that was overlooked, both in the commerce template and by the district and its reporting. And that was resolved by the commerce, including that reporting element and their updated template, and the district answered those questions and report what was required to. So we considered that fully resolved. There was also a management letter item from the prior examination that addressed how the district was reporting bill reductions resulting from its energy efficiency program. And we saw that the district resolved that issue as well and performed that calculation correctly. So the issues of the prior audit were all resolved adequately. Are there any questions about that body of work? Okay,
thank you.
Great. I'll move on then. We'll go to the renewable compliance examination. I should point out as well, in providing you the reports, we've also provided what we call a representation letter. We ask everybody to sign, and in that letter is just assertions that we rely on what the district is making when it says it complies. We understand these things to have taken place. And it's just the district's acknowledgement that those took place. So if you have any questions about those, please let me. The second report is the renewable energy compliance examination. And in this one, we've been doing this for quite some time, and I believe that this is the 13th period that the district has complied with this requirement. And this is for period January 1st, 2024 through December 31st, 2024. And we tackled this in two phases. One was looking at how the district can determine its target for renewable energy. The Energy Independence Act requires the district acquire renewable energy, 15% of the energy it supplies its retail customers from renewable sources. So our job is to see that the district calculated its target correctly and then acquired enough in renewable energy to meet that target. Both those conditions were met. So the district had a target of just over a million megawatt hours of renewables that was required to acquire. It retired renewable energy credits and sufficient of a megawatt hour value sufficient to meet that. And so we found the district compliant and we are showing a clean opinion on the district's compliance with those requirements. Any questions about that?
That's most of our questions?
No.
Okay. The third area we looked at was the energy conservation requirements of the Energy Independence Act. And we'll be issuing an unmodified clean opinion on the district's compliance in that area as well. Forgive me while I grab my notes on this one. But, this is a little more complex of an area that we look at in that we do this in two phases. We look at the Energy Independence Act requires the district to develop a conservation potential assessment of the conservation it anticipates it'll acquire over the next 10 years and then take a pro rata share of that 10-year assessment as its target for the biennial period. And so we're tasked with looking at how the district applied the methodology that Commerce puts forth in its WAC rules, the Washington Administrative Code. And we hire a subject matter expert, SBW Consulting, who's our consultant who helped us with this, and found that the district followed the methodology that Commerce requires and developed its 10-year conservation potential in accordance with the Act, and that it indeed took a biennial a pro rata share of that as its biennial target as adopted by the Commission. Once we had that established, we completed that work in early 2022, right after the target was adopted. and then took a break, waited for the period to end for the district to tally up the conservation it had acquired, and then came back and verified that the district had acquired at least enough to meet that target. We don't look at all the acquisition, all the conservation the district requires, because we just want to make sure that the law's requirement, the needed target is met. And in doing that, we select a park, we use some sampling techniques and some other testing, and have a subset that we're able to test, verify that the acquisitions that we selected actually occurred, that they're reasonably valued, the estimated energy savings was reasonably valued. And in this case, we had about 27 commercial and industrial projects that we randomly selected. And to help us with the looking at the engineering studies that underpin those the savings on each of those projects, we had a consultant from Washington State University's Energy Extension Program assist us in looking at those. And the result there was that no reportable issues came out of anything that we looked at. The energy savings that we selected for testing were reasonable relative to the support that we looked at. So we worked closely with management of the conservation to share the results of what our consultant had done, so they could benefit from that work, and it resulted in the finding that the district complied, and no reportable issues. Any questions about that?
Questions?
I have none.
So what you can expect is that these reports will go out next week, and so that'll conclude those until we have again. And in the handout that we provided, it provides a little matrix on page 3 that shows the upcoming audits, the audit numbers, so you can do some budgeting, forecasting, and when that work's about to take place. So you have the Energy Independence Act represented on that matrix, and then our next round of what we're required to the scope of the CETA, the Clean Energy Transformation Act examination, will be performing in 2027. But I think just wanted to take time to thank Michael Coe, Murray Morrison, Jeff Feinberg, Garrison Marr for their great work in helping us out and making these go very smooth. And it's always a pleasure working with your staff and yourselves to lead these engagements.
Are you and your staff mostly working remotely now? Or are you coming into the building and are we giving you a good spot to work in?
Actually, we don't come on site at all.
Okay.
So yeah, because I'm up in Bellingham.
Okay.
And, my colleague Travis, who's Travis Viral, he's an assistant manager. He's in Wenatchee.
Oh, wow.
And then we have Heather Peterson. She's in Spokane. So we got a nice
cross
big commute. Yeah. Somebody coming down here is real easy for the meetings, but we do work remotely. And under CETA, we audit 39 public utilities. And under the Energy Independence Act, 13 public utilities are subject to that requirement. So, yeah, they're spread across the state. So it makes sense. And It's a good thing we have remote. It saves people a lot of money instead of having us show up at their door and go,
sure,
we're here for a week, you know.
Well, thank you for getting up early, putting on a tie.
Oh, you bet.
I will say one of the highlights is looking at the list of all the projects. And I think, gosh, wouldn't it be fun to name projects?
What's that now?
The list of all the projects we're getting.
Oh, yeah. Let's go with half a day. Yeah.
So, is that market now? Is that what we're buying off the market, or is it through Bonneville?
It's a mixture of everything. Look at the Solar Express. All the years when we had it's a lot. It really adds up.
Now, we were asked a lot for the list of renewables that people are doing. You know, how many reps are they And so it got to a point where it's like, we might as well just put that schedule in the report because everybody's asking for it. So we've been including it for years now, and it's really helped inform.
That's great.
But you guys have a lot of resources you're reaching for, and that Solar Express has really grown.
So. Yeah.
So, no findings.
Nope.
And there was a finding in 2023 that has been corrected.
Correct. That was under CETA. Yeah, correct.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit what was the finding?
The finding had to do with CETA requires when you're reporting low-income energy assistance, when you're performing the low-income energy assistance assessment, the biannual assessment, it requires certain elements be present. One of those elements is an assessment of the amount of funding you put toward a program compared to certain goals that you've set. So there's a 2030 goal and a 2050 goal, those years. And those are based on what your current energy assistance need is, and they're a percentage of it. So 2030, your goal is 60% of that current energy assistance need. Current energy assistance need is the energy burden, excess energy burden on low-income customers. When they pay more than 6% of their annual income toward energy costs, that margin above 6% is what's called excess energy burden. So if somebody's sitting at 12% of their income, what does it take? How much does it take to get them to 6% or less? And so that current energy assistance need is what you're trying to knock down by providing energy assistance. So you set these goals and then you measure how much you're putting toward your programs in comparison to those goals. And that's what's required to be reported each biennium. And the first run, Commerce left that out of their template, and the district didn't catch that they had that report, that comparison. So we were stuck. Can't say you complied. It's a required element. You must do this. It wasn't present. We can't say you did it. So hence, we had to have a finding by our standards. But we worked closely to detail why that occurred. So it wasn't all just the result of the district oversight. It was like, yes, it was also not part of the template you were provided for the report. But that got resolved. But in this next run, Commerce, we contacted them right away, and they revised the template for this current period that we looked at and included that schedule. So people were aware and had that they had to report it. So that got resolved.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Just really appreciate the partnership with you and your team, and great work as usual.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it is now 8:18 a.m. and our meeting is recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene here in the commission meeting room at 9 a.m. sharp. Good morning. Welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on August 5th, 2025. And time to reconvene our regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commissions. Joining me today are Tony Olson, our Vice President, Julieta Altamirano Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, our Clerk of the Board, Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. This time I will say the flag salute, and we'd like to join the United. Okay. Copies of the agenda are located on the Deputy Clerk's table near the entrance. Commissioners, are there any items to be added or changes to be made to the public agenda?
I have them.
Comments from the public is item 3 on the agenda, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on today's agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes. The person shall be recognized to speak from the sign-up cards located on the Deputy Clerk's table.
Let me just help it. I hope we have after recognition, which is number 3.
Sorry?
I'm showing that comment from the public there number three.
Yeah. Good. Sign up cards are near the debit clerk's table near the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or now sign up star 9 on my phone, and I'll call you to speak at the appropriate time. When you're called on and on a phone, please dial star 6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state your name, and indicate where you are from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If documents or the materials entered into the record, hand them to the deputy clerk, who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with all our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor. So first up is item 2, recognition declarations, and we'll start out with our employee of the month, Tim Grand, and we have Rob Bridler here to talk about Tim.
Where is Tim?
Oh, he's here.
Oh, we have a Babette in the audience. Right? Is that a dog or a baby?
Not sure yet.
That was terrible. I'm so sorry.
Morning.
Am I up?
You are.
Oh, good morning. Rob Bidler, Senior Manager of Safety, Security, and Emergency Management. So, Tim, one of our safety specialists is being recognized for Employee of the Month. Specifically, the write-up was a lot about his training. And, you know, I'll be brief, but I will say this. If somebody is a really good trainer and teacher, I think we would all admit that they could make us safer, that they can save lives. Well, then the converse can also be true. If somebody is bad and does not impart knowledge that people do not retain, then you can cost people. Well, Tim, when we brought him here 5 years ago, seems like 200, 300. We brought Tim here because of his skills and his ability to impart knowledge and for people to retain it. He entertains, he's articulate, he's shockingly knowledgeable. And when people walk out, in some things. And when people walk out, they know things they did not know before. And that saves lives. And we've seen over and over again that people at the district and outside the district have implemented those skills over and over. And so there's no possible way that with Tim here, that we are not safer. I mean, we are. And everybody has a better shot at getting home every day now.
Yeah, I'm the one in the cast.
Yeah. I was not going to bring up the elephant in the room, but he cracked the seal. And I'll let him address that.
Good at speeches. Good. Please. Thanks.
I just was trying to be a gentleman.
I will just say I've had the opportunity to sit in on and endure some of Tim's training classes, and he does do a phenomenal job of expressing the key points and making it entertaining and engaging. So you are making a difference in regards to keeping our folks safer here, as well as what's been demonstrated by some of your training classes for our folks here who have then gone out and saved lives in the community. So you're making a big difference.
Come on up.
Well, first off, I want to say thank you for all you do, and the board. We got to be trained by you, and your humor, sometimes sarcasm, all those things really are a powerful ingredient to make someone memorable and to drive a point home. So,
thank you.
I can believe that I've done a lot here.
I appreciate it. So,
you also get the new version of the trophy, which was upgraded to class.
Yeah.
So it can break.
Okay.
The pieces will be sharp. So
I break just about everything.
Okay. Well, yeah. Like it.
Yeah.
Thank there you. Go. Congratulations.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for all that you do for the training for keep us safe and with safety. But what happened with the safety?
Happens.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Bad. Okay. Thank you. And here is the.
Thank you.
$50. You get set with that all day. Okay. Okay.
Switch, please.
Well, safety is in our core statement. And boy, have I been pushing for that for years. But I can kind of defer. In your write up, it talked about working with a contract crew and having a little confab.
Thank Kevin for that.
And I was thinking about that, and I thought, was it snowstorm or?
It was a major, wasn't it a major, Kevin? Major storm?
Oh, the Camino Island, yeah.
Yeah, the Camino Island.
Okay. And we're freezing our garbanzo beans off, probably. And Tony would probably, because she's cold, would have to take a pee. And you want to get together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya.
Well, we call it a safety hush.
I got to tell you, hey, that was a new one once again. That is great. I'd like to have been on that contract crew. I would have given you any time.
They didn't want
to
be there.
Anyway, that's a first for me to read that. So
thank you.
Well, thank you. So you have the opportunity to have the mic and tell us anything you want to.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I didn't get to share it.
Oh. Well, you don't have to.
That's good.
How about that for a TV promo? Oh. Come on.
It's like TV personality.
His daughter is.
He is.
Well, I mean, you know, one of those big macho kind of.
Aren't you agree?
You may have had the wrong career.
A lot would agree.
So, Tim, you have some people you would like to introduce? And
right there. Kevin and Key. Now, there's my wife. She lied. She lied to me 35 years. She told me she wasn't going to be here. Happy about that. My son. My son, Spencer.
And there's a dog.
Yes. And then my daughter.
Family can come up there too.
Get a picture with family and Spencer and
sign. Little sign.
That's going on the Christmas card.
Here, let's get up out of the way and we'll take a picture here.
Okay.
Hold those for you here.
Yeah, great.
What's that, boss?
Let me hold these for the picture.
How old is the baby?
7 weeks.
Shy.
Great.
Okay, I'll do it.
Come on, Don. Do it.
Oh, so cute. Awesome.
Oh, good job.
Cool.
Good job.
Check that out. That is amazing. Thank you.
Nice work.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
That's the
whole thing.
All right. Next up, we have a couple of recognitions that are a little closer to us. Item 2B, our master municipal clerk designation for Jenny Rich. We have Allison Morrison here to introduce Jenny.
Good morning.
I'm going to do them both together. I'm going to come up here because
I've used the microphone.
I've always wanted to be up here at this one. I just
don't tell you.
So I'm very honored to not be honoring one team member today, but two. Jenny Rich, our Deputy Clerk of the Board, recently achieved her Master Municipal Clerk designation from the International Institute of Municipal Clerks. It's a prestigious honor that reflects Jenny's dedication in pursuit of learning and growth in her role of clerk. Earning at the MSC requires advanced education after earning the Certified Municipal Clerk certification. This commitment is a high standard to ethical standards, significant contributions to our community. Jenny's accomplishment places her among a select group of 57 clerks in Washington State that hold this designation. Please join me in congratulating Jenny on this outstanding achievement. And I'm going to go right into the next one, and equally privileged to honor Morgan, whose unwavering commitment and extreme services have greatly contributed to our team's success. Morgan has recently completed the demanding certified municipal clerk program, an achievement that underscores both professionalism and desire for growth as well. This certification requires intensive coursework, demonstrated dedication to public service, and an adherence to the highest ethical standards. Morgan now joins 141 clerks in Washington State who have this dedication, and she's well on her way to her Master Municipal certification as well. So help me. Thank you, real quick. I just wanted to take a moment to extend my heartfelt gratitude to the board and John, you guys. Without you, your steadfast encouragement and support for us, the commitment to fostering education and professional development within our team has made monumental achievements in the last few years. By investing in our growth, you empower us to better serve our community and reach new heights together to serve our internal and external customers. So thank you.
I'll also say that they've both received the Stephen Keeler Award as well.
Oh, yes. I was not going to take that away from some healers. If you guys can come down and get a picture with them, that would be great.
Let's go down.
Oh, okay. Hold up. Now that means the whole meeting will fall.
Here, I got to like the songs.
Thank you.
When we get together, we got to squeeze in.
You say I'm yelling, so I don't know.
Right. Got it. Perfect.
Thank you. Beautiful
thing. I've said to you many times, the books don't realize how tough these jobs are. We expect perfection because we are the public face of the utility, and voters elect us expecting perfection. And these folks have to deal with three distinctly different personalities with different needs. And they have to use different approaches with each one of us. Bring it all together and make it happen. That ain't easy to me. I know that. So my apologies for being a pain in the butt. Never.
When I congratulate you for all the support and all the knowledge that you bring us. I mean, in my humble opinion, and I really appreciate all your words and support with me, and congratulations.
I'll just say it's impressive the accomplishments that you both have made, investments in yourselves. I know, I don't remember the statistics, but I know I've seen them in the past. There's not that many that have the status and so or this training. Thank you very much. So I also know that it can be challenging. And I appreciate that. We all have different ways we like to do things.
I admit it.
I was talking about you.
I'm proud of it. All these years to prove.
But thank you very, very much. You guys make it look seamless. And then we added, you know, the electronic component and the online, and that always just works flawlessly. Sometimes it's nerve-wracking because the computer's not working 30 seconds before the meeting starts, but it all comes off. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay. We have item three, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public items that are not listed on today's agenda? Please state first and last name for the record. And we have Stephen Keeler. Mr. Keeler, you want to come up? 5 minutes, sir.
My name is Stephen Keeler. Last name is spelled K-E-E-L-E-R, a resident of Edmonds, Washington. Good morning, commissioners. Public Power Council applauds BPA's decision to join Southwest Power Pool Markets Plus. Subsequently, a handful of green NGOs seek to further destroy the Western grid reliability by forcing California Chaos to replace a thoroughly vetted BPA position. I urge this commission at SNOPA to voice continuing support for BPA's decision. Reject California and the green NGOs. I also see by a recent issue of The Wire, the PUD is undertaking a noble effort to bolster the fund used to help struggling customers pay their bills. Commissioners, I'm confused. In the late summer, early fall of last year, The Wire was reporting with considerable satisfaction the infusion of tens of million dollars of dollars from the Climate Commitment Act Fund to aid PUD customers. Of course, there was absolutely no connection then to the timing of the politician's release of this tax money with the impending possible repeal of the Climate Commitment Act by Washington state voters. So instead of asking customers to help the less fortunate, ask Snohomish County politicians for more help. Let The Wire publish the politician's response. And in closing, speaking of this Climate Commitment Act fraud, Washington State's Department of Ecology seems unable to release CO2 data for this state, showing how Climate Commitment has or is reducing CO2 levels in Snohomish County or elsewhere in this state. Perhaps it's time for The Wire to publish an article authored by the PUD's government affairs liaison on why ecology can ignore requirements of this legislation. Quotes from local politicians would be great included content. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Keeler. If no one else in the room is online, we have Gila. Gila, would you unmute? You're muted. Gila, you're still muted. Gila, I still show you muted. There you go.
Okay, thank you. Good morning. I'm Gayla Shume, calling from Edmonds. I wanted to speak with you about emergency disaster planning. I'm working with a group a coalition in Edmonds to assure that the city of Edmonds and its community are prepared for emergencies. We've got the city, South County Fire, the police, and community groups all working together. At a recent meeting, they asked about the role of the PUD in emergency and disaster planning and asked if I would check with the PUD about who is the person responsible for emergency disaster planning at the PUD. If you could give me the name of that person and the phone number, I would be glad to contact them and see if they would like to be listed on our minutes or to participate in the meetings. We're very concerned and understand that the PUD is very involved in any kind of emergency, and we would like to have them involved as soon as possible. My number is 425-418-7673, and you could also reach me online. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. We'll have someone reach out to you. Not seeing any other hands raised. We'll move to item four, our consent agenda. 4A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of July 15, 2025, and the special meeting of July 21st, 2025. 4B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. And 4C, consideration of certification / ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. Any hands up in the room or online? Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments about any of the consent agenda items?
I have none.
I do have a question of clarification on the amendment for managed services agreement with Census, and I would hope someone could walk me through the summary of the changes to this amendment, kind of just put some words, these are bulleted items, but a few of them I don't understand, so just walk me through it, please.
Morning, commissioners. I'm Jason Brust, I'm one of the ITS application managers. Going to walk us through that amendment and hopefully address the components that are changing on there. Basically, this amendment has three main components within it. The first component is around the term of the contract. So we're asking to extend this managed services agreement by 2 years through December of 2029. We will also have an option within this contract to renew it for an additional 5-year term with a 3% annual increase that has been capped within there. So this managed service contract covers all of our SaaS fees, as well as our FlexNet managed services with Census. The FlexNet managed services is where the Census experts will handle the monitoring, management, and maintenance of our AMI communication network. But that service does not begin until we have 98% of our meters deployed, and that Census has completed the system validation testing and district has approved it. So basically, the meter delivery delays from Census have pushed the anticipated start of that managed services from 26 to 27. So we're requesting to extend the contract to allow the district adequate time to evaluate those managed services before we commit to a longer term 5-year renewal. The second component of the amendment is around pricing. So the amendment will reduce our cost by 58% in 2025 and 50% in 2026. So first, we're going to be reducing our SaaS fees for the current and projected meter deployment. Those SaaS fees are tied directly to the number of deployed meters and the distribution automation devices, also DA devices. With the delays from Census, we're reducing the SaaS cost to align with that scheduled meter deployment, and this will be a $250,000 reduction for the district. Related to that reduction of SaaS fees, we're also shifting the managed service costs to future years to align with when will be the completion of the meter deployment. So again, because we're not going to have 98% of the deployments until 2027, we're shifting the start of the managed services to begin in 27. And by adding those 2 years to the contract, we actually will have one additional year of that managed services as compared to the original contract. And so again, that gives us time to really have that sufficient time to evaluate that service and make sure we want to go in for that longer 5-year renewal. The other change that we're seeing here is with the DOE SnowSmart grant, that covers 700 new DA devices that were not originally covered by this for SaaS fees. So we'll have a total now of 900 total DA devices that we have to pay SaaS fees for, and that adds 6% to the overall value of the contract. And then there's a other item on there too, so the amendment for pricing also covers funding for some new and future capabilities and services for custom development, reporting and analytics, and integration. So the new services are going to give us better visibility, reliability, ease of use, and security. Those will add 5% to the overall value of the contract. The first item is the extended dashboard for automation control that enhances our grid reliability, outage response, and customer engagement. We'll also be getting a private circuit that will establish a secure, dedicated communication network. And finally, we will have an Active Directory SSO integration that will improve our security and simplify the user access management piece. All right, the final component of the amendment is around operational and administrative updates. So the updates are going to help us streamline our processes, clarify roles and responsibilities for accountability, and update project leadership. I will talk to one of those examples. We're moving from our monthly billing, which is what we have today with them, to an annual billing. And so that'll basically be a 12th of the cost for reviewing invoices and paying them. But we still have them. We're still holding them accountable to our service level agreements on a monthly level. So we'll still be reviewing and getting credits if they fall below the agreed upon limits. So in summary, I just want to assure the commissioners that we are not getting less for more. And we're really focused on doing what's right for our taxpayers. This amendment allows us to extend the contract with an additional year of managed services. We are locking in pricing through 2029 at pre-COVID rates. We're also securing SaaS fees needed to cover the additional DA devices that we're purchasing under the SnowSmart grid. The overall value of the contract may seem to be increasing significantly, but it's due to the two additional years of the contract that will be in place when we're fully deployed.
Thank you very much. I didn't see all of that in this, so I really appreciate it. And so that I understand, the amendment is over a number of years. It's not all in 2026.
Correct.
So,
yes, correct. Yep.
All right, thank you. Excellent explanation.
And I will add, the last time, which was recently, we looked at the project in total and the budget, we were still on course to be just slightly under budget. We had budget in any of the cable sequences. Remarkable when you think of inflation, tariffs, those kinds of
challenges. And what the project has
experienced
because of.
Right. Yeah. Nice work.
Hey, any other questions or comments, commissioners, on the consent agenda?
I have none.
Okay. I will call for a vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passed unanimously. Next, item 5, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. This item is for the board and our general manager to discuss issues along with staff. And John Harlow will facilitate this conversation. Morning, John.
Morning, commissioners. First up is our media update, and Aaron Swaney.
Good morning, John. Good morning, commissioners. Aaron Swaney, Manager of Communications and Marketing. Today for the media report. I just wanted to point out this nice article we had in the Herald. Wildfires have been in the news quite a bit lately. There's a red flag warning actually called in our region a couple weeks ago in mid-July. The Herald kind of reached out, wanted to know, you know, what that meant to us, kind of talked about what, you know, what our wildfire mitigation plan looks like. We were able to really quickly, this happened in a couple of days, get David Popich, who really did a lot of work on our wildfire mitigation plan, get Josh Perez's tree trimming crews for photos, really got that together quickly, and credit to them for all the work on that. So I think the story turned out really well. All the work we're doing and planning to make sure we're safe from wildfires. I also wanted to mention that the Latino Herald, we're also working on a story in the Latino Herald, same topic. So that should be coming out the next week or so. We had a transmission line open house for the Maltby Paradise line. This we put out a press release, got picked up by a number of publications. I heard that they had about 50 folks show up. We're going through the comments, but overall, I think that the vibe was pretty good from customers, and I think they've kind of locked in on one route that they prefer over the others. But overall, a really good open house and a way to engage with customers in that area.
Good.
Just wanted to mention this. We've been talking a lot about summer projects. The website was really dedicated to that in, I think it was June. Just all the work that crews are doing, Camino, to that Crosswind substation, Highway 530, Linwood area. So just lots and lots of them voted for the EPA actually picked that up and did a nice story on that. Just a couple of other things. The Department of Commerce had a ribbon cutting for a EV charger the set of EV chargers they've installed in the Arlington area. We went out to it and got quoted in the Herald story, just talking about how we really are fully supportive of these. It's kind of a unique situation where they have battery backup, so we didn't have to install a lot of excess capacity equipment, so it went in rather quickly. So it was a good story overall.
Where are those located?
They're up at the Island Cross.
Island Cross, yeah.
I can't remember.
Right there near the gas station.
Right. And I didn't know anything about it until I read about it. It's sort of fascinating that you put the charger with a battery and you don't have to have the big service to it. We don't have to deal with the loads.
Yeah, I reached out to our engineer just for kind of background. David Wood was talking about it, and he said that, you know, honestly, we didn't do a ton of work. We didn't have to because of the battery backup. So
was this the city or private?
This was private through Department of Commerce. It was actually a CCA grant money. It was the first charger that they've installed through the CCA grant money. Any chargers?
It's fascinating.
How many chargers are in the station?
I think it's about 7. I believe in their fast chargers. It's either 5 or 7. It's a bank of 3 or 4, and they each side has chargers. So I just wanted to mention Fitch Ratings got a press release talking about our bonds are upgraded to AA and also our IDR. So that was really nice. And then we've seen a lot of chatter in the news, op-ed and letters to the editor on Markets Plus. Just wanted you guys to know that we, you know, working with Garrison's team, Adam Cornelius, Joe Fina, on messaging and making sure our customers are informed on this going forward.
Yeah, I think we have a good story. So I think it's important for our customers to understand.
I agree. We do have a really good story. And I just think it's finding the right timing.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to think of a clever analogy of, you know, how this compares to other things in life. But I haven't really quite come up.
If you come up with it, let me know.
Yeah.
Love and help, too.
It's like who's counting the money versus two. I don't know. There's a.
You're taking that down a strange path.
Yeah, I am.
Just wanted to point out the wire. We really highlighted our education team, all the work that they have done over the school year. Just tons and tons of really great work from Heather Herbst and Kelly Singletary. So highlighted them, feedback from the teachers. Even had one of our meter installers, a comment from him that we cherry picked from one of his Q&As talking about the fact that he actually learned about the PUD as a child and now he works here now.
Well,
he learned it's a great place to work. So. And then also I wanted to mention Safety Days is tomorrow and Thursday. A lot of work went into this publication. You'll see it if you go out there. Kelsey Wiebe and Sophia Hiskey did a ton of work on this. And then the back is all of the teams that did the work for Safety Days. So kudos to them. Really did a great job.
Important.
And that's it for me.
Just one thing I wanted to mention on the publications, the preview for the Evergreen State Fair. I really appreciated that it's been put out online, so you don't have to get that paper. Did I make that up? That's true, isn't it?
The Evergreen State Fair?
Yeah, isn't that?
That's coming up, yes.
Isn't that all online now, the packet information? And
yes.
Stuff?
Yes, so all the training.
Yeah.
Yes, all the training and all that is online.
I like that.
Much easier. That was also in the wire. We did promote that in the wire too. So making sure customers know.
I think the test is harder than sure.
What?
The test you have to get more difficult.
I'm trying to be in a good
behavior. Any questions for Aaron, commissioners?
No, only I want to say thank you for the work and the presentations that you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Aaron. Yeah. Excellent, excellent job. All right, next up for our legislative update, Jenna Peth is going to give an overview of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act and the impacts of the PUD. And Jenna, I believe, is online. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning, John and commissioners. I'm Jenna Peth, the district's federal affairs specialist. And like John mentioned, I'm here to provide an overview of the recently signed One Big Beautiful Bill Act and walk through some of the most relevant impacts to the PUD as well as to our customers writ large. Next slide, please. So just to go over the agenda at a high level, I'm gonna go over what's in the bill at sort of the 10,000 foot level. Then I'm gonna walk through impacts in five key areas, including clean energy tax credits, broader electric sector implications, business tax code changes, affordability programs, and some workforce related tax provisions. Next slide, please. So the One Big Beautiful Bill Act was signed into law on July 4th of this year. At its core, it extends the 2017 Trump era tax credits. That was a law known as the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, as well as adding new tax breaks and making some significant spending cuts, especially in the areas of Medicaid, SNAP, and clean energy programs. It also raises the debt ceiling and adds about $2.8 trillion to the federal deficit over the next decade, but I will flag that number is in perpetual flux based on what analysis you're looking at. It is a very large bill with a lot of sweeping changes, and there are certainly some elements that support economic growth and others that might have other equity and electric sector impacts that might be more negative. Next slide, please. So to review the clean energy tax credit changes, at a really high level, the bill really reflects a shift in energy policy that we're seeing from the Trump administration and the Republican majority in both the House and the Senate, which is putting more emphasis on domestic energy production as well as grid reliability. It specifically highlights support for clean, firm resources like hydropower and nuclear, which are often seen as critical to maintaining reliability, as well as supporting the continued load growth that we're seeing across the country. It accelerates the phase out of certain renewable energy tax credits, primarily wind and solar. And that is, of course, a notable change from past policy that was included in the Inflation Reduction Act, which leaned heavily on long-term support for renewables. These changes could definitely impact how quickly new renewable projects get built and financed, especially if developers begin reassessing timelines based on these changing incentives. Additionally, timelines for renewables might be further impacted by pending guidance from the Treasury Department that could alter the definition of certain project development thresholds. And I just wanted to flag that point because there's, of course, the bill itself, and there's the implementation components. And so that's something we'll continue to watch as the various federal agencies work to enact the provisions in the bill. Next slide, please. So talking through relevance to the broader electric and utility sector. So as I mentioned previously, the bill does put more of that emphasis on clean, reliable power like hydropower and nuclear, which is, of course, a significant win for the PUD and our regional partners. That was something that we coordinated with our trade associations and other folks to create a really strong advocacy group throughout the negotiations. At the same time, the quicker phase out of some renewable energy credits could make solar or wind projects in the region harder to pencil out. It will also have a larger impact on other utilities in the state that were more heavily reliant on clean energy credits versus the position we're in, where we are not as heavily reliant on those clean energy credits as a financing tool for generation projects. This could also trickle into state policy as we see utilities under more pressure to deliver on clean energy requirements without the added federal incentives. The bill also eliminates the EV incentives, which will likely have an impact on EV adoption and therefore the load growth associated with that piece of electrification. Next slide, please. So like I mentioned, a central part of this bill are the business tax code changes, which include, of course, like I mentioned, the extension, and in some cases, making permanent certain changes to the code that were incorporated in that 2017 bill I mentioned, as well as the restoration of certain R&D incentives. Wanted to flag this for us because it matters in terms of not so much the direct impact, but more in terms of economic development, both locally and in the region. Specifically, the R&D provisions could help support regional business growth and potentially fuel electricity demand. Next slide, please. Next, I wanted to flag some impacts to affordability. So like I mentioned at the top, the bill does include a mix of provisions that could affect affordability for our customers in some different ways. So on one hand, there are reductions in federal spending programs, both in healthcare and in nutrition, SNAP and Medicaid notably, and new requirements that could result in fewer people qualifying for those programs over time. I will note that the enactment of those programs is pushed into the future. So we will have to wait and see how many of those provisions come to fruition or if there's further Congress takes action in the future to revise those timelines. This could, of course, increase financial pressure on some of our, excuse me, on some of our lower income customers and in turn affect our customer assistance programs. On the other hand, there are some provisions that improve household affordability, including the child care tax credit, which is permanently increased to $2,200. There's also new funding to support rural hospitals, and the state and local tax deduction cap is raised to $40,000 through 2029, which could be helpful for some households in higher cost areas like ours. Next slide, please. So on the workforce piece, so between 2025 and 2028, there's going to be some deductions that workers can take for overtime pay that has caps, income caps at which the amount that can be deducted from your annual return will be decreased in incremental pace. That will be determined in part by Treasury guidance upon implementation. And then there are similar deductions for tipped workers. Again, those are tied to both individual earner and household earner income limits. Next slide, please. So stepping back, I just wanted to review at a very high level what this means for us. So of course, I'm sure you've gathered throughout the presentation, there isn't really a direct operational or compliance impact in the short term. But longer term, the bill could certainly influence how we plan and finance clean energy resources, and it could change affordability dynamics for customers, especially those dependent on safety net programs. And it could spur economic growth in key sectors and potentially drive future electricity demand. And of course, we'll continue to work with our stakeholders to shape implementation, and we'll keep a close eye on how regulations and other guidance comes out of the rulemaking process. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions, commissioners?
I have a few questions. Well, thank you so much for the presentation. As you mentioned, that they might impact and reduce the incentives for customers. So are we planning ahead in case we see more customers need help with their bills? I mean, because of change of federal programs impact already. Jan mentioned in one slide about this presentation. And sorry for my accent, I tried to do my best. So when you mentioned about the reduced incentives for customers, my question to ask here as a beauty, are we planning ahead in case we see more customers need help with their bills? Because this is going to impact, of course, and reduce incentives for our customers and support our customers for help.
Yeah, the general answer is yes. I mean, we continue to assess and get the financial information and criteria that is set, you know, locally and throughout the state, and then we adjust our amounts that we want to contribute or can contribute to continue to try to ease the energy cost burden for our customers. So all the whatever changes in legislation take place, we'll evaluate that with the values of our program and what we want to be able to continue to do on behalf of our customers.
Okay, well, thank you. And the other thing is only for clarification. So these changes, they might impact our solar projects that we have and everything in place.
So this does not actually impact our solar and storage project. The way that contract was structured, it was not reliant on the clean energy tax credits. So that was sort of what I alluded to earlier in terms of we're in a much better position than some of the other utilities in the region where we are not as exposed on these tax credit modifications.
Okay, thank you so much.
I did have a question. Page eight, slide eight. First bullet, does that mean that an individual, well, first of all, does that apply only to federal workers or is that all workers?
No, that how the language is written, it would theoretically apply to all workers. As I mentioned, we'll probably see some Treasury guidance that might put some certain parameters around who can claim that deduction, but generally speaking, it'll apply to all workers.
So a deduction, so therefore, if I earn under 12.5 a year, I pay no taxes on that. In overtime, I pay no taxes on that. Is that the way I read this? Correct.
Correct, but that would have to be 12.5 and only overtime pay.
Sorry, I didn't clarify that.
Yes.
Only in overtime. All right.
I've got a comment and a question. So first, Commissioner Altamirano Crosby, when we go through the budget process, the amount of assistance that we're estimating the levy for customers, that'll be part of that. That'll be interesting to look to see.
Yeah,
the question is going up.
Thank you for the clarification, because I'm concerned about all the impacts in federal and local, state, and if the customers want the support mostly right now. I mean, we see, for example, food banks. We have more people in the food banks than when COVID impact. So everything starts to impact all the customers. So thank you.
Yeah. And then my question for you, Jenna, is so I understand that the hydropower and nuclear tax credits were changed, but is the administration with this new energy policy, are they doing anything to drive really new hydro projects and nuclear projects?
Yeah.
It doesn't really feel like it, but I'm curious what your thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's certainly, it is a goal of the administration. There's been a couple of executive orders that have tried to push, particularly for more nuclear development, but there's been some hydropower implications as well. I would say the primary way they're trying to drive an increase in that firm baseload generation is permitting reforms and trying to streamline permitting at the agency level, at that federal tier. So that would be the primary driver in their eyes for how they're working towards expanding that, as well as doing some things, particularly on the nuclear side, to increase fuel availability and things like that.
Thank you.
And Jenna, would any of that be affected with the, and I'm not sure on the status, but this Energy Dominance Commission that the administration has formed?
Yep. So the Energy Dominance Council is one of those groups that is supposed to be looking at what is a hindrance to energy projects writ large, essentially all projects other than wind and solar. So hydropower and nuclear are certainly included in that. And that group sort of has a dual prong approach. So they, on one hand, they're doing a review across all the federal agencies of existing policies that might be slowing down projects or preventing entities from being interested in starting projects. And then they're also open to hearing from utilities, developers, et cetera, on problems that they're having at the federal level with permitting and how the Energy Dominance Council can help sort of break loose some of those blockages.
And I know APPA, I happened to be in DC yesterday meeting with some of the APPA staff and their general counsel and GR folks were meeting at the White House with the executive director or assistant director for this newly formed Energy Dominance Council.
So where does transmission fit into that? This Dominance Council and for the administration? We were always talking about the need for transmission. And the public knows about the need for transmission because there's been so many stories, and we're building almost none of it in this nation. So I'm curious, but.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Jenna, do you know?
Yeah. I would say that the administration at a high level is much more focused on getting more generation online as opposed to more transmission. But I will say that there is a growing interest in the administration, particularly on grid enhancing technologies and things that could help expand existing lines, as well as potentially looking at where we might need strategic build out specifically to support data center and AI loads.
Thank you.
Kind of hard, you know, to call the source. We don't have any place to send it. Sorry.
Yeah. Any other questions, Commissioner? No. Thank you, Jenna.
Yeah, great job, Jenna. Thank you. Okay, next up is results from our 2025 financing in Lauren Way. Good morning, Lauren.
Our big, beautiful bond sale.
That's right. Why
do
you say that?
Which
one? I don't know. Good morning, Commissioners. Lauren Way, Manager of Treasury and Financial Risk. Here today to present our financing results for really excited to be here today. Jeff Bishop said it well on a call that we had at the conclusion of our pricing, that this is really the crescendo of the issuance. So a lot of work leading up to the pricing event. So this is the most exciting piece, in my opinion. All right, so just for information purposes only today, no action required, and this will be the last update that we provide around the finance. All right, so kicking us off, I wanted to give an overview of what pricing really looks like. So it's a sort of a week, an event in a week. We, as I mentioned, we do lots of lead up to get to the pricing process. And then the week of pricing, we're having several check-in calls with our underwriters and financial advisor, in addition to our internal team. As I'm sure you can imagine, we're very closely monitoring the market, identifying opportunities and risks, what supply is looking like in the market, the week that we're heading into price the bonds, how investors are responding to the supply, whether there's any market events or economic data releases that are coming up that we need to think about that may potentially create additional uncertainty when we're heading into pricing. So on Monday, ahead of our pricing day, we had a market check-in call, and the theme of the call was we were cautiously optimistic. We had some strong economic data heading into the week of pricing. But despite that strong economic data, investors were really continuing to trade cautiously. Uncertainty has been, the buzzword throughout the year. And so we've really seen that reflected in how investors were responding to issuances. In addition, there's been really heavy supply this year. So we've seen about 20 to 25% higher supply through the year than we saw in 2024. A lot of issuers had the mindset of just get it done, get the deals done so they could get the money in the door to finance their projects, which is not too different from the approach that we took this year in accelerating the timeline to get the deal done in light of some of that uncertainty. With that said, we're really optimistic about the district's credit, especially in light of the recent upgrade from Fitch. Really strong credit in addition to the structure and the overall size of the deal. So we were really the only issuer in the market from Washington during that week or that day specifically. And so, we're hoping to see some really good interest from investors. So the day before pricing is pre-pricing, and we meet with our underwriters, financial advisors, internal team to chat about, continue chatting about what they're seeing in the market, and also to evaluate comparable transactions. So they look at issuers that are similar in credit to the district, essential services that may have priced transactions a couple days ahead of us to kind of gauge what investors were looking for, how those deals fared in the market, and what the pricing was established for those deals. And they use that information to help set the initial pricing structure for the district's bonds. Once we review and approve the structure, then we kind of give them the go-ahead, and they start reaching out to investors to garner interest and begin marketing the bonds. The next day is pricing day. It's the main event in the morning before the bonds really go live. We have another meeting and chat about sort of some of the feedback that was received from investors during the pre-pricing session. And then we make some final adjustments to the rates. At that time, we really, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of market movement. So we did see some minor increases in yield, but only about one basis point or 0.01%. So pretty small movements there. And then once we give the go ahead, the order period starts, and that's the most exciting piece. So we get to watch the orders come in through this system called Game Day. And that's the screenshot that you're seeing down below. Kind of hard to see, but I wanted to show what we're looking at all morning. It was kind of fun. We had set up in our group in Treasury, we had a big screen TV where we had the order screen up so everyone could come by and take a peek and watch as orders were coming in. So we get to watch it live. It's quite a bit of fun. So what you're looking at here, so each one of these bars represents a maturity year of the bonds. When we come into pricing, when this first starts, those bars are a light gray color. And then as orders come in, they turn blue and they fill in. So, you know, investors can buy varying sizes of bonds. And we're looking to fill the entire amount that we have available to sell. So for example, in 2036 and 2037, you can see some percentages there above those bars. I think it's 67%. And then 23%. So we didn't fill the full amount available there. But more excitingly, in all of the other maturity years, you can see a ratio sitting above the bars there. And that represents the amount of the subscription. So the amount of orders that we received relative to the amount of bonds that we had available to sell. So in 2055, you can see we were 8.7 times subscribed. And that means that we received orders, 8.7 times more orders than we had bonds available to sell. We had $51 million available of bonds, and we received $444 million in orders for that one maturity year, which is really remarkable. So it's really exciting to see. And what that high oversubscription does for us is it allows us to move rates down, allows us to make pricing adjustments that turn into, you know, dollars saved for the district and our customers.
I have a question.
Yes.
What is the interest rate?
Yep, we're going to get into that on the next page here. But just to preview, it's we had several components of the transaction, so the interest rate varies depending on which series we're looking at, but it was about 3.78 at the low end and 4.43% at the high end.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So when you're watching this on the big screen, it feels like a tailgate party.
It kind of feels like it. We had donuts, and John stopped by.
It is awesome. This is like our financial Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Screen going, donuts. Yeah, it's awesome.
Can we join the party?
Right.
Yeah, we talked about like getting a cowbell and ringing the bell. And order payments.
That's good.
Yeah. After the order period, which typically lasts around two hours or so, we reconvene with the underwriters and make any adjustments down or up, depending on the interest and the subscription levels. So in this case, we were able to decrease yields in a lot of the maturities. The greatest decrease we had was 8 basis points or 0.08%. And then we had some minor increases in maturity years that were a little bit more challenging to sell to investors.
And why is it just because the market's got a lot of things out there they can purchase for, say, 2036, or why do...
There seemed to be just more uncertainty in sort of the belly of the curve or the mid portion of the maturities rather than at the front end and the back end. So sort of more value in the front end, the yields are higher and there's a little bit more certainty. And then at the very long end of the curve, we had, a really large maturity block there, about $51 million, which investors, the institutional investors, really like those big blocks. And so that, probably has to do with it as well.
Thank you.
All right, so at the end of the day, we had about $436 million between all four series of bonds, both systems, available to sell, and we received orders of over $1.3 billion. So really, really remarkable interest from investors. Just some quick stats on the investors. We had 220 orders from 48 different unique investors, and 63% of the investors were new investors of the district. So it's, often we see investors that hold the district's bonds come back and buy more of the district's bonds, but pretty exciting to see that we had, a majority of investors were new to the district's credit. So in the bottom right there, we have some information about the top 10 investors who placed orders for the district's bonds. These are just the orders. These aren't the amounts that settled at the end of the day necessarily. But you can see they're primarily institutional investors. As I mentioned, institutional investors really appreciate larger blocks of investments. And so we saw a lot of interest on the electric system bonds because it was such a large deal, really large maturity blocks. And we saw less interest on the generation side, I think, specifically because there were smaller blocks, in some cases less than $1 million, where, institutional investors are looking for 10 plus million dollar blocks. And also, we think it was probably a little bit overshadowed by the significant electric system deal that was being priced at the same time. With that said, after the order period, the adjustments that we made to the yields and the coupons were mostly favorable. And the bonds that we didn't sell, the underwriters agreed to purchase at the investor rate that we had initially established. So a really good result for us. Oh, in the top right, the information about, or the numbers here behind the savings and the rates that we secured by series. So total PV savings, present value savings for all of the refunding transactions was about $12.1 million. And that includes about $1.9 million of Build America bond savings as well. So we had initially talked about there being potential for losses on those, but we were comfortable accepting them to eliminate the risks that were associated with those bonds. So we're really pleased to see a positive outcome there, positive savings for those bonds as well. And then the true interest cost by series is available there as well. As I noted, 3.78 at the low end and 4.43% at the high end. While these rates are a little bit higher than we've seen in recent years, we're really pleased with the outcome of the sale in spite of, much of the uncertainty that we've seen in the market this year, the volatility that we've seen, and the complexity of this transaction. You know, we were able to secure $185 million of new money that we'll use to finance a portion of our capital plan. We were able to capture $12.1 million of PD savings, able to release about $18 million from our debt service reserve funds that will, a portion of which will be used to pay debt service, and a portion was used to buy down the refunding. So overall, just a really positive result. And, you know, we were able to capture competitive rates that are available in the market today. So really excited at the outcome.
And all these, I think, have a provision that we can essentially buy back, or, what's that called?
The call.
A call.
The call. Yep. So they all have a 10-year par call. Yep, in 2035, they will all be eligible for refunding. And we'll take a look at them at that time and evaluate whether that's a good decision for us. Awesome. So to close us out here, I just wanted to revisit the financing timeline to just sort of show how far we've come. So we started this process back in May, and we just priced the bonds, closed a portion of the transaction on July 29th, and we'll be closing the remaining portion of the transaction on September 3rd. So we're not quite done. We still have, you know, a bunch of back-end accounting work. I want to give a shout out to Quinn Latouris, sitting here in the crowd on my team. She's doing a lot of behind the scenes work to make sure that the transactions are reported properly on our books. You know, we're going to have $400+ million hitting the financial statements in July. So really significant transactions, a lot of complexity from an accounting perspective to ensure that it's all reported properly and booked properly in our debt portfolio and investment portfolio as well. So, with that, that's all I have today.
Questions?
Thank you. Really good.
Excellent. Yeah, great presentation. Nice work. Glad it was a crescendo.
Yeah.
Not, you know, like a symphony, not an opera, or some tragic happens in the end.
Thank you, Lauren. And just really quick, a huge thank you to Quinn, Lauren, Angela, and Jeff, and the entire team. This is a huge lift. Again, extending back to May and likely even in some cases beyond that. And also to the legal department and the other parts of the team, the full team, really, again, huge lift and huge outcome. And it was super exciting to go down and see the excitement from everybody on game day and watch all their hard work come to a very good outcome.
Yeah, very cool.
Really cool.
Well, let's take a 10-minute break.
Sounds good.
Let's come back at 10:20. And when we are back.
Awesome. Well, my apologies. I inadvertently skipped over one of the updates that we intended to have earlier. It's Peter Zamar and Adam Cornelius with an update on our EPA load following in the transmission contracts. Morning, Garrison.
Morning, John. Morning, commissioners. I wanted to give a quick update on some work that the staff is moving through and what we expect will be on the August 19th commission agenda. So as a staff and commission, we've talked many times about our transition to the BPA load following power product and network transmission product. And the commission has also authorized quite a few activities to support that transition. Around this time last year, authorized the product change to those products, authorized the sale of assets made surplus by that product transition, authorized a request to BPA for a post-2028 contract with the load following product, and our staff has also presented the long-term power plan to this commission multiple times with the load following product as the basis for that long-term power plan. But in order to hit our date of the October 1st changeover to the BPA load following power product and network transmission product,
there are a number of complex contracts and agreements with multiple deadlines set by BPA that staff have had to manage and move forward so that we can implement and execute what we were directed by commission to do. Some of these deadlines are fast approaching, and some of these deadlines, because of complications with the transmission service request pause, created a time of the essence situation where we needed to move forward some component agreements to make sure that we were transitioning some of our transmission assets appropriately. So as a result, we plan to bring a series of agreements to the 819 commission agreement for authorization from the commission to execute those agreements for the BP26 power product change, the BP26 transmission product change, and also to ratify some of these incremental agreements that we've needed to do to convert some of our point-to-point transmission to network transmission in order to be able to sign these operating and service agreements. So this update is really to tell you, gosh, we've been working hard behind the scenes here, probably more than a couple dozen different component parts that staff has been working. We want to bring those all to the commission, but because of the timing constraints set by BPA, we're not able to have a traditional briefing on each component part. We do know that we've talked about this transition a lot as a commission and a staff, so we wanted to provide this verbal update for what you can expect next. We will also provide advanced materials, all of these contracts with memos explaining that well in advance of the August 19th commission meeting. And that's what I have for you today.
Questions?
I have a comment. Do you think that you can send in ahead of time by email in order that we can digest or I can digest before that you go with the presentation?
Okay. That's our intention. We intend to transmit everything before the normal board packet transmittal so that folks have more time to
prepare. How many days before the yes, I know that we have to accomplish that and the deadline is, you know, it's a race right now, but I would like to know like how many days do we have in order to digest that too.
It's fast as humanly possible, but I'm looking at Colin because his team's very involved in this, and I want to make sure that my fast as humanly possible isn't out of step with Colin's as fast as humanly possible.
Joe and I are coordinating on the resolutions. We should have those done shortly, and then drafts of the agreements or any draft agreements that we're working on as soon as possible. I would imagine by this week.
Yeah, with the understanding that as you continue to work with them, there may be some modification in what comes before us finally. But I do appreciate you raising that issue. And then along with that will come an overview, just a general overview with each of the instruments.
Correct. We'll have explanatory memos.
And is there any significant differences with what has been in our previous presentations? I mean significant. And if there aren't any, that's great.
The only thing that I'll mention is that we've seen some significant positive financial implications relative to some of our earlier forecasts, specifically RSS costs. We will do much better financially than previously. Resource support services. So you will see that in the budget, but that's the most significant deviation from what's previously been shared with the commission.
And then when does the 2028 contract approve?
We are to sign that by the end of the year. We do plan to schedule a full briefing for that. We do have the time for that, and then get commission authorization to sign that. But we don't have a full draft in hand yet.
Okay. I'm just curious because it seemed like one of the utilities in the region
already approved it. So I was just curious. Maybe I'm wrong. Someone did a news release. Nope, getting blank looks. So I think I'm wrong. Any more questions for Garrison?
No, thank you.
Thank you, Garrison.
Thank you.
Great job. Okay, next up, and this is where Adam Cornelius comes in. Our update on the proposed renewable energy credit purchase.
More credit for two things. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Adam Cornelius. I'm a power analyst in our power supply department. And among other roles, I manage the renewable energy credit, or REC, trading for the district. And today I'm presenting on two proposed renewable energy credit purchases that require would require board authorization. So I'll start by providing a review of the Energy Independence Act, or the EIA, and the PUD's approach to compliance. And then I'll go over some of the details of the proposed REC purchases, which would be used to support EIA compliance. Next couple of slides are similar to what I presented back in April. So maybe go through them fairly quickly, but you know, definitely stop me if you have any questions. So one component of the Energy Independence Act is the Renewable Portfolio Standard, or RPS, which requires utilities to use eligible renewable resources and or acquire eligible renewable energy credits, or RECs, equal to 15% of a utility's load. And just for a sense of scale, for us, that target is around a million RECs a year. I'm not going to go through all of these, but you know, RECs essentially convey the environmental attribute associated with the energy source. They can be sold bundled, as with, for example, our wind purchase contracts, where it's bundled with the underlying energy, or unbundled and separate from that underlying energy. And one REC represents 1 megawatt hour of renewable energy. I would also point out the non-compliance penalty of $75 a megawatt hour, which is much higher than you know any REC prices we see out in the market. So, our compliance approach starts really with the integrated resource plan, and we include these requirements in that planning to help inform our least cost and least risk resource strategy. The most recent IRP from 2023 identified that the lowest cost option would be a mix of bundled renewables and unbundled REC purchases. But the transition to the BPA load fall-in product and associated sales of some of our wind contracts do place more emphasis on unbundled REC purchases in the near term. So under Resolution 5844, which dates back to 2018, the general manager or his designee is authorized to purchase unbundled RECs to meet the statutory and regulatory requirements if the purchase meets certain criteria. So first, it's needed to meet compliance for either the current or the next year. So essentially right now in 2025, under this resolution, we can purchase unbundled RECs to meet our compliance for 25 or 26. The RECs also must be consistent with the quantities and strategies specified in the IRP or other analysis, and we review the creditworthiness of our counterparties. So, progress update, we've been actively this year purchasing unbundled RECs from 2024 to 2026 to support that compliance in 25-26 under that resolution. And as of the end of July, we've met approximately 100% of our forecasted 2025 target obligation and 95% of the target in 2026. Those numbers will change as flow changes, generation changes, things like that, but we're in pretty good shape for this year and next year. But then as described below, REC purchases to support compliance for 2027 and beyond need to be approved by the commission because they're outside of the scope of that resolution. And that's really why I'm here today. So we have two proposed REC purchases. The seller of both is a company called 3Degrees. They market various environmental commodities, including RECs. A long history of working with them, going back to at least 2012. And so there's two separate purchases. Deal number one would be a purchase of 75,000 vintage 2027 RECs. And number two would be a strip of 75,000 RECs per year from 2028 to 2030. So some considerations as to why we are recommending moving forward with these purchases. We think it's prudent to begin working towards our compliance for beyond 2026 at this time. Purchasing ahead of time reduces the risk that there may be low volume availability and therefore exposure to that $75 penalty as we approach the compliance year. Spreading out our purchases over time also spreads out the price risk. Prices of these products can change over time. We don't know if they're gonna go up or go down. And so
it's locked in.
We lock in these purchases and we continue to procure over time. So we're not leaving it all till the the year of or the year before the compliance. Contract structure results in minimal risk to the PUD. The seller is responsible for assuring that the RECs are eligible for EIA compliance. If an issue came up, it'd be their responsibility to address that. It's a fixed volume of RECs that isn't dependent on any particular generator. And the PUD would only pay after resetting RECs. Other than the timing, which we've mentioned is outside of the scope of Resolution 5844, otherwise these transactions would be consistent with that resolution. So that they're consistent with the quantity and strategies identified by the IRP, and we have, our middle office has completed the creditworthiness review of the settlement. So that's really what I have for you today. So our next steps would be for the commission to consider a resolution that would authorize the general manager to execute these two agreements to purchase RECs from 2027 to 30 from 3Degrees. Happy to take any questions.
Questions, Frank? Yes.
I got my answer.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Excellent job, Adam. And I believe that is it for briefings.
All right. Next, we'll move on to item six, our CEO General Manager report. Your report first.
Yeah, a couple items to share. First of all, on July 31st, 8 candidates graduated from our foreman training program, 5 from line, 2 from wire, and 1 from vegetation management or tree trimmer. The fit, as you remember, and also the foreman in training program, the fit program, and the lit program, which is the leads in training programs, are designed to prepare future foremen and leads in the district through comprehensive technical and leadership training, mentorship, and evaluations. Also, we had a few crews go and participate in the Pacific Northwest Lineman's Rodeo held on July 26th in Portland. Teams did fantastic. A number of overall, we had teams finish 3rd and 5th, 6th and 10th overall. in the journeyman classification, the number of first places in different events by our crews, and then also had apprentices that participated in and did quite well and placed top of the charts on a couple of different events. So a great showing again by our line crews and apprentices. And then major equipment and our yard group completed another section of the transmission rebuild from Stanwood to Camino, including one large steel pole, which was 7 foot in diameter at the base. So they come in three pieces, but a huge kudos. And I think I've mentioned this before, the major yard group has really been pretty innovative in how they are safely setting boring holes and setting those poles, which originally was going to be contracted out as part of this project. And they have not only done it much more efficiently and safely, but also saved us a bunch of money, and the timing for the project has been much more effective as well. And then also just an update to keep your confidence up, and with some of the budget challenges that we've had on our reliability efforts, engineering and line crews have designed and replaced over 420 bad order poles through July of this year. And that's over half of our 600 target for 2025. So great job to everybody that's involved in that process. And that is it. Happy to take any questions.
Questions or comments? None for
thank you for that.
I have a question on both barren sections.
Yeah, those.
Is it by height?
Yeah, three sections. It set the base, and then they put the next section on top of that, and then the final section on the top.
Yeah, how many healthy? What do they use?
The material is steel, and then.
Right. So is there something bolts or something?
Yeah, they come down and they bolt okay. Together when the sections come together. Yeah.
I know I'm going way beyond. I'm off topic.
I think it's big cranes, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe it'd be, if we could arrange it, it would be super cool for you all to watch that, because the equipment set up and all the things that are going on, it's pretty cool.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, it'd be a
cool
thing. It'd be a cool thing. If there are things that are really kind of outside of the
norm. Yeah. Yeah, and again, it's something that we historically have not done, and the crews and engineers have all stepped up to figure out how to do it safely, most importantly, but also pretty efficiently, and really helps the project management.
Yeah.
You should possibly think about those instances about filming it.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm always into construction.
Yeah, good idea.
All right, next, item 7, items for individual consideration. 7A, consideration of a motion accepting the asset protection monitoring program. I'll call for a motion.
I will accept it.
Are farmers able to answer any questions regarding the motion? First, I'll ask, is there any comments from the public regarding the resolution?
And just to confirm, it's actually a motion, not a resolution. So it's an errand.
Okay. So there are any comments from the public regarding the motion? Please raise your hand. Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments about the item?
I have none.
Nope. Where it should be. Good. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passed unanimously. Next, item 8, commission reports, northern reports, commissioners.
I have done.
I've got a couple. First off, Commissioner Alphonse Crosby and I had the opportunity yesterday morning to go and do the ribbon cutting for Viking Way, a new road that cuts through our former back lot of our PUD building. And, just some really super positive comments from the mayor, from several city staff about We had a lot of our own staff there today, our SJ too, but just about how the PD cooperated in the process and the good relationship that we have.
Excellent.
Yeah, and several city council people there, and everyone says this is going to make a huge, huge difference in staying on traffic. And then, commissioners, I don't know how much you're aware, but Energy Northwest is taking on with Amazon and others to build a small modular reactor. And the proposed location is on one of the spots that Energy Northwest has right there near Columbia. It was designed for one of the reactors that never got built. So that's one of the things. Energy Northwest brings a couple of things to the region. One is experience with nuclear, obviously. But the other thing is we have, I believe, maybe one of the only approved sites to site a reactor. So it makes them attractive. So in an interesting turn of things, you know, I'm on the board of Energy Northwest, and the board mostly does not have much responsibility, but the responsibility for most things that happen in Energy Northwest all lies within the executive board. And so the board's role, since I've been on it, is mostly appointing people to the executive board. I always joke at political awareness. But it turns out there's a state law that requires the board of directors to approve all new nuclear projects. The executive board has been working on this project, working with Amazon, doing their due diligence for about 2 years. And it's going to transition to where the board, which doesn't meet as often, is now will be responsible for approving or disapproving projects. So what's going to happen first is there's going to be a conditional approval in late October. Conditional approval is not a legal step, it's just a step there for what to add it to the process. And then they're looking for final approval in May of next year. And that approval would include each of the entities' full boards. So we'll be asked to be voting probably next May. So in the short term, the important thing right now is to establish the conditional approval criteria. So the board is going to be working on what those criteria are. And I have some strong opinions. I'm really concerned about risk, and I want to make sure the organization has done everything it can to mitigate risk, not only to it, because that would affect Bonneville's rates potentially, but of course to all the member utilities as well. So, I met with Allison, John, and Colin recently, and John and Colin have promised some staffing to help me understand as we go through. So the next meeting, there's a special meeting August 13th, and I'm hoping that I have some support there. It's a virtual meeting. I thought maybe I would just come into the office here, and whoever you've got to help me could be sitting next to me to help feed me the right things to say and the questions. So it's very important that we get it right. It's a big undertaking, and you know, projects like this, since they have not been built, I don't think a small modular has been built in our country yet. I think there's a couple that have been built in the world. It's exciting technology. It can really be a game changer for our nation, but it's interesting to have us be the ones that are put forward first.
Commend you for reaching out to staff. That board is a mix of, and I'm trying to see. Yes.
You started because I'm really strong
feeling. No, I'm just wondering if you might suggest the thing that the board also take the opportunity to bring in resources that can give the facts so that the board isn't spinning and making some assumptions that are really far from real.
Yeah, and that's that has been my initial ask. We've not really sat down and had this big conversation we're going to have in August, I guess it's September. But my ask was to get outside, and I think they're leaning on just using whatever the executive board has done. But so that'll be, it'll be a very interesting situation. I think it's, you know, it's a board that was put together and never should really take on this, this kind of a thing, right? We're building a reactor that's never been built before for another customer. Right? The public power customers at this time are looking to be off-takers. There's still that opportunity. So it's fascinating, and I've been frustrated by the board before and some of the decisions they've made that we've been put on the board.
Well, it has to do well.
There we are.
I won't go into it any more than that. I know that you're a strong leader, and you're thinking in support of that. But I sure hope you don't give up.
Yeah. Well, we also have Seattle and Tacoma. They have representation.
I understand
and
that,
I think
but
they will probably
the majority may need some help.
Yes.
I'm just curious, do they exist any other similar project in other countries in order to look at like how it works or something?
Yeah, I think well, first of all, it's a great question. And my understanding, and I'm not an expert, is several small modular designs. Most have never been built. So I think Russians built one and China's built one is my thought, but I'm sure it's not the design that we're building or we're proposing to build. So there's several different organizations. They've all come up with different designs. They're all very clever and have the promise of being much safer. They can shut down without the meltdown aspect of Three Mile Island that we have inherited. And they can be modular, so they can be small. You can make them bigger, smaller. Conceivably, a small village in Alaska could someday run off a small. So, but you know, anything, the estimated cost of power is not inexpensive. You know, I think Amazon probably has clean energy targets, and so they're interested in doing that. It's just with anything new, it's just an unknown.
I won't go any further.
I don't know. The Amazon person was at the meeting. I really wonder what they were thinking after the meeting was over. So
they want to get a quality product.
They want to get a quality product. And I think that's a positive that a large organization like that. But they're actually looking at doing these projects all around them. Watches up, they have ambitious goals. So all that to say that I will be bringing updates to you as time goes forward, and to expect next year that we'll probably have people from Energy Northwest come to us and talk to us, but we'll be in a place to make a decision.
Yeah.
So the really important thing is to get these conditional criteria set and then make sure we've met the criteria. Anything else, Steph?
Yeah. Very helpful. Okay. And I'm confident that you will provide strong leadership.
Thank you. I'm not confident that I will get what I want.
Oh, I don't know.
We'll see.
Just a little bit of additional commentary, and I think Commissioner Altamaro probably asked an excellent question, and I wanted to make sure I was correct. Russia had pointed it wasn't technically an SMR. It's actually a floating nuclear plant back in 2020 that's been operational. China had deployed their first actual more similar SMR technology in 2021 that had been online and on the grid. But I don't know if we are or to what extent we're actually learning from those two projects, and especially the more specifically the one from China. But that has been on the grid, and a couple of our peers. Paul Loud was the CEO at SMUD. I had a conversation with him, with John Estazio, who was the CEO for LPPC. They went on a trip to China to explore some of these types of activities. And China is very willing to, you know, share their learnings and their progress. I just don't know how much we're actually taking advantage of that, if at all.
Yeah. All right. Next, 8B, our commission events calendar. Any changes to the events calendar? Okay. 8C, our June 2025 district performance dashboard. Any questions or comments about the dashboard? I had one. It was in our vehicle accidents, and I'm wondering, you know, we don't it's just a total number of accidents, right? We don't divide by the miles or, I'm wondering with Connect Up, with us, do we have more vehicles out in the field? With all, especially with these sort of new to us employees.
We do. I mean, we have more Connect Up meter installers in play, but, and we do track the mileage.
Okay.
And we have a PVA or a preventable vehicle accident rate. We just use the number of vehicle accidents here. Even if we have driven a few more miles, it's still honestly no excuse for the number of vehicle accidents, especially backing accidents. Backing accidents make up 50% of those PVAs. We've had a lot of conversation at the ELT on how to more effectively address that going forward, and we will continue to put measures in place, because it's honestly, I feel it's unacceptable for us to be backing into that many stationary objects. We just have to fix it, and we will.
Is there a class of vehicle where we have more of these problems?
Yeah, it's actually more the small pickup trucks and SUVs that we utilize, and the bigger trucks.
Okay. Any questions or comments, commissioners? Okay. Move to item 9, our governance planning calendar. 9A, is there any changes to the governance planning calendar?
I just have one. Staff has asked that the multilingual community outreach and support presentation for August 19th to the September 9th date so they have more time to prepare.
Anything else? Okay. Well, is there any further business to come before the board today, commissioners?
I have none.
Okay. It is now 10:55 a.m. The board will recess into executive session to discuss current or potential litigation. It's anticipated the executive session will last approximately 30 minutes and conclude at 11:25. The commission is not expected to take further action following the executive session and will adjourn the regular meeting upon the conclusion. Please wait on the call.
Right. Okay.
It is now 11:21 a.m. and our regular meeting is now adjourned.